Well, hello, greetings to everybody from everywhere. Welcome to the next installment for the Sufi Studies Network. Aidagan, Kas, and I welcome you. And I will be, I am honored to be your host yet again. Today we'll have a 30 minutes recorded presentation followed by a 20 minutes Q&A. Our guest speaker is Dr. Hakan Çoru, who is a senior lecturer in Islamic studies at Charles Sturt University. He completed his PhD at the Catholic University and his Australian Catholic University. And his PhD research was a comparative study in early modern exegesis of the Quran, Sayyid Nursi, Muhammad Abdu, and Sayyid Khan. Hakan's first book, Modern Interpretation of the Quran, The Contribution of Bidyu Zaman Sayyid Nursi, was published in 2019 by Palgrave Macmillan. Hakan also has a dozen of impressive articles published in peer-reviewed journals on Quranic exegesis, contemporary Islamic thought, Islamic legal theories, jurisprudence, ethics, and comparative theology. So I recommend everyone have a look at that. Today, Hakan will deliver a talk on the work of a very influential theological work and a commentary written by a prominent Ottoman scholar. His talk is entitled A Conceptual Model of Islamic Ethics in the Medieval Period, a study of Ijiz ethics and its contemporary commentary by Teşke Pirazadeh. Sorry if I didn't pronounce that correctly. Hakan will deliver, as I said, his 30 minutes talk and then followed by a 20 minute Q&A. Welcome, Hakan, and I'll hand it over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Milad. Thank you for your nice words about me and your introducing me. Thank you. All right. Good morning, everyone. It is a pleasure to be with you today. I follow up your circle and your readings. Thank you, Aydoğan. My colleagues Aydan and Milad, you know, they always let us know, inform us your weekly schedule programs. I think it is fascinating. Such reading circles, Sufi network, and these hidden treasure seminars, workshops look fascinating. I follow up. Actually, I would like to contribute to this your circle through this topic. I have been reading, actually, I and my colleague have been reading on classical Islamic ethics, in general Islamic ethics, for several years. And we have actually discussed, we have read originally in Arabic, Adudin Ali'ci's tafsir, epistle on ethics, and by the commentator of Teşke Pirazadeh for over 2 years. I think almost done, we have completed majority of them by discussing relevant topics and themes in ethics. Today, just around half an hour, I would like to just summarize what is Islamic ethics and what is Islamic philosophy of ethics, or what was Islamic philosophy of ethics in the medieval period, in the classical period. I don't know, have you seen this one, this photo before? Is there any idea about this photo? All right, let me explain this. There is a little information at the bottom in Arabic. Actually, this picture represents Muslim Abbasid Khalif Ma'mun's meeting with Greek philosopher Aristotle in his dream. Aristotle says that knowledge has no any boundaries. Wisdom, hikmah, has no any race and nationality. Rejection of ideas is rejection of God's mighty dominion, malakut. Yeah, this represents this dream. العلم لا حدود لها والحكمة لا عرق أو جنسية لها. رد الأفكار هو رد ملكوت الله in Arabic. All right. أخلاق, of course, when we say أخلاق, plural of خلق or خلق, character, خلق means character in English, and plural is أخلاق, is an important discipline in Islamic studies. But of course, this is an interdisciplinary area, not just only one area. among multiple Islamic disciplines. Why? I will explain. Because various Islamic literature includes akhlaq or akhlaq themes under different areas. For example, as I said, various Islamic literature includes akhlaq, ethics, Islamic ethics under practical philosophy. And they consider under philosophy, practical philosophy. But akhlaq is also connected with Islamic disciplines such as kalam, fiqh, and tasawwuf. For example, Muslim theologians, what is good, what is evil, and can we decide, can we determine by human intellect, for example. This is ethical issue. Or in Islamic jurisprudence, they discuss juristic rulings, but along with also ethical aspects of any rulings as well. Tasawwuf also deals with virtues, vices, and human soul's perfection, via purification and good actions, mujahada, and riyazat and mujahada, very connected with also ethics, akhlaq. As I said, very multidisciplinary area. Philosophically background scholars, Muslim scholars consider under practical philosophy, but some other scholars consider put akhlaq in different contexts, in religious studies, maybe fiqh and tasawwuf actually deals with akhlaq area, what they say. Akhlaq in Islamic philosophical ethics, how they define, one performs good behavior spontaneously without thinking about them. Actually, it becomes a part of your nature. You know, for example, when we drive the car, we don't think how to drive because it became a part of our nature. Akhlaq like this, it is a malaka, it's a faculty, is a property of the soul which comes into existence through exercise and repetitive practice and is not easily destroyed. This is the definition of akhlaq in Islamic ethical literature. Of course, this definition is in line with Aristotle ethics structure and framework. I will explain later. And of course, for Muslims, Quran and Sunnah, two primary sources for human life and guidelines in human life. But in addition to Quran and Sunnah, Muslims consider that they were inheritors of human knowledge, cumulative human knowledge, and also some areas in the Quran and Sunnah are ambiguous or general, not detailed. For example, Quran talks about spirit, ruh, but Quran and Sunnah does not give details. What is ruh? What is the nature? Then actually, they thought that they needed to engage with cumulative human knowledge. And they adopted, of course, in that time, they adopted Greek philosophy and ethics. And Muslim ethicists like Miskewe developed philosophical akhlaq, virtue ethics. Actually, Miskewe is very famous, very important figure in Islamic history. Actually, he translated Aristotle ethics into Islamic literature through his Arabic work, Tahdhib al-Akhlaq, Refinement of Character. It is available in English language as well. Miskewe, important figure. Besides Quran and Sunnah, prophetic teachings, Islamic moral ethics adopted Greek philosophy and ethics. Because open civilization, if it is universal, if knowledge is universal, science is universal, then it needs to be adopted. It needs to be harmonized with the Quran and Sunnah. And due to their, as I said, universal scientific nature, the Muslim philosophers accepted Greek philosophy as a hikmah, wisdom, because like the Quran, philosophy also, dealt with the similar topics such as nature, human and human existence. Muslim ethicists like Miskewe discussed the doctrine of the soul, nafs, and what are the faculties of soul which affect our behavior, such as faculty of anger, faculty of desires, faculty of intellect, for example. And what are the virtues? What are the virtues of these faculties? And what are the vices of these faculties? And how to maintain, how to obtain these virtues and how to remove vices? Actually, what they say, Islamic philosophers, Muslim ethicists, they argue that aim is happiness, by abandoning virtues, sorry, by acquiring virtues, fadail, by abandoning vices, radail, we are obtaining and maintaining virtues, and we are removing vices, then we are achieving sa'ada. Concept of sa'ada, happiness, is the very important top term in the classical period, in classical Islamic ethics. Sa'ada, happiness. Then achieving happiness through actually perfection of the soul. How to perfect the soul? Through obtaining virtues, abandoning vices. Just very basic aim and purpose of Islamic ethics. They attempted to harmonize virtue ethics with the Quran and Hadith and Islamic worldview. As I said, Miskewe, Tusi, and E.G., Tashkub Razali. There are also other figures I've included. Of course, first of all, Muslim philosophers. Kindi has a short treatise on huzn, for example, sorrow. What are the causes of sorrow? What are the remedies for sorrow? So, of course, this is extreme sorrow, not, of course, sorrow or, you know, huzn. Sadness is part of our nature. We cannot disregard, you know, we cannot get rid of it fully, but, you know, extreme version, for example, Kindi, Farabi, Ibn Sina. For example, Yahya bin Adi, he's a Christian ethicist, but he's writing ethics in an Arabic context, and his book, Tahdhib al-Akhlaq, Refinement of Character, same name, title, with Miskewe, and he's writing in English, in Arabic, sorry. You know, his book is in Arabic. And same structure, he is using same Aristotle structure, I will show you later. But of course, in some areas, because he's Christian, of course, he's putting Christian perspectives. Very interesting, this Yahya bin Adi's case. There are a few studies, but I don't know if there are deeper engagement with and study with Yahya bin Adi, Tahdhib al-Akhlaq, as Christian ethicist and theologian. Miskewe, as I said, in general, when we look at the medieval period, classical period, religious traditions tend to adopt, you know, Aristotle framework, ethics. Christians, Jewish, for example, look at Maimonides. Yeah, he has ethical writings. I have it. It's a similar structure. You know, of course, while he criticizes in some areas, but they adopted it, the religious traditions in general. Miskewe, important figure, as I said, he, Tahdhib al-Akhlaq, important. Actually, after Miskewe, philosophical, ethical literature in Islamic history somehow actually connected with Miskewe's writing, Miskewe's book. Graghib al-Isfahani, very famous figure, very important. And he has also ethics book, and there is very good book in English and study English on his work. Ghazali, Tusi, Nasiruddin al-Tusi, Nasiri in Ethics, Akhlaq al-Nasiri, and E.G. I will focus on today E.G. and mostly, but and also in the final part, a little bit, E.G.'s one commentary, super commentary by Tashkub Razali on E.G.'s ethics. Of course, my presentation is mainly on classical period, medieval period. There are modern ethicists as well. We see in the modern period in Muslim world, there are diverse other approaches as well. And it seems because of Ahle Hadith Manhaj and Salafism, such philosophical ethics, you know, it tends to disregard actually many Muslim scholarship today. For example, Abdullah Duraz, they want to focus more on Quran based, Sunnah based, and Abdullah Duraz, for example, specific case moral ethics of the Quran. He is more Kantian based, you know, duty based ethics. His focus rather than just this classical style. Islamic ethical tradition has drawn generally on Aristotelian ethical framework, consequently emphasized the nature of the virtues and the cultivation of wisdom. Form of philosophical ethics that goes back to Aristotle often referred to as virtue ethics, based on a particular understanding of human nature and biology. Of course, this Virtue ethics actually is based on human biology, because biologically we have the three faculties affect our behavior. We have desires, faculty of anger, we have anger, and faculty of intellect, we have intellect. These faculties affect our behavior. Then there should be a middle way for each faculty, and there can be, of course, excesses and deficiencies for each faculty and virtues for each faculty as well. Religious traditions tend to adopt this form of ethics in the medieval period, as I said. After Kant, West left Aristotle way virtue ethics. Of course, in the Muslim world, traditional madrasas still, there are some, it depends on which part of Muslim world. But as I said, there is influence of al-Hadith manhaj as well. But in some areas, they are studied. Alastair MacIntyre, very important modern philosopher, actually, in his book, After Virtue. And he criticized modern moral philosophy, and he argues that actually modern moral philosophy failed because of several reasons. And he says that we should go back to Aristotelian framework. We should revise it, MacIntyre, in his book, After Virtue. Little bit information, I have, all right, 15 minutes. Adududdin al-Iji and Akhlaq Adudiyya. Adududdin. Actually, this is nickname. Adud means upper arm or power, strength of the deen. Nickname al-Iji. Actually, he was born in Ij, near Shiraz. For this reason, also al-Iji, from Ij. Adududdin al-Iji, of course, very important figure, very in the post-classical period, in the second classical period, one of the greatest theologians which affect post-classical period in Islamic history. Yeah, Aydoğan is a theologian, you know, he may know better than, but very important figure. I have just one edited monograph on Adududdin al-Iji's and his scholarship, a very important figure. In theology, his book, Al-Muwaqif, his theological writings. But in addition to Batkov, he is very well known with his kalam expertise. But in addition to this kalam, he has also one short treatise. As I said, Ar-Risalat al-Akhlaq. Ar-Risalat al-Akhlaq. It is called Al-Akhlaq Adudiyya. Akhlaq Adudiyya. Was very influential text. And taught in Ottoman and Iran scientific circles and madrasas, seminaries for many centuries. Because it is a very short treatise. Of course, it is a good tool and textbook to memorize it. If you remember, in the traditional madrasas, they used to memorize it. Actually, E.G. successfully summarized in a condensed form in his classical Islamic ethics follows a sequence of works that examine ethics from a philosophical perspective rooted in Aristotle Nicomachean ethics, such as Farabi, Avicenna, Miskaway, Pusey, and Devani. Actually, Al-Iji summarized Nasiruddin Al-Tusi's ethics work, Nasirin Ethics, Akhlaq Nasiri, because Tusi's this work was very dominant and authoritative in philosophical ethics area in the Muslim world in that time. And it was in Persian, and Adududdin al-Iji translated into Arabic, all right? But in a unique way, is that in according to his own style and format, and in a very condensed and concise manner. Because it is very condensed and concise, actually, a large number of super commentaries have written on it, because it is very condensed and concise. Actually, while one has criticized this in terms of, this is not original, then nothing new. You know, it is a summary of Tusi's ethics, but actually what is originality here is actually what is unique here is its brevity and condensed form. You know, you are making a good, very great summary in a condensed form. You know, what is detail? Actually, this is the uniqueness aspect, and of course, this serves for traditional madrasas. They memorize it. This text in traditional madrasas for centuries. What actually EG did, according to Feryal Salem, reconstruction of Nasirian ethics into a short treatise, reconstruction, adopted in madrasa networks. Just briefly, what is the structure of the treatise, EG's ethics? First one, theoretical ethics. Actually, philosophical ethics are divided into two categories, theoretical ethics and practical ethics. First one, theoretical ethics, what is character and nature of character? All right, khuluk. And if character can be changed or not. These are the discussions. And faculties of the human soul, virtues and vices. Second, the part two, preserving and acquiring virtues. For example, how virtues are acquired and maintained, and spiritual sicknesses originating from human faculties. There are also spiritual sicknesses or maladies originating each human faculty. For example, spiritual sicknesses originating from power of faculty of intellect or faculty of anger, faculty of desires. They discuss what are the reasons, what are the cures and solutions, etc. Part three, household management. Part four, political philosophy. Actually, when Muslim ethicists adopted Aristotle ethics, actually, they did not merely translate. Actually, they reconstructed. For example, in Aristotle ethics, there is no part three and four. There is no household management, tedbirul manzil, and there is no part four, tedbirul mudun. You know, management of the city or political philosophy. Pusey added this. And also, secondly, they did not just only merely translate Aristotle ethics into Islamic framework. What they did, actually, they harmonize with the Quran and Sunnah. Actually, they explain terms with Islamic terms, even through Islamic worldview. For example, I was reading Tashkur Prezade. For example, when he talks about hikmah, wisdom, he includes Sufi terms, ilm al-yaqin, you know, knowledge, certainty by knowledge, ayn al-yaqin, certainty by witnessing, haqq al-yaqin, etc. They explain through Islamic terms. As I said, household management and political philosophy are not included in Nicomachean ethics, but they included, and they discuss, as you can see, household management, wealth, consideration of livelihood, what are the rights and responsibilities between spouses. Of course, in this area, in some areas, of course, they include Quran, Sunnah, but of course, in some parts, particularly commentaries by Tashkur Prezade, we see a custom of 16th century Ottoman life. Of course, today we live in a different context, and political philosophy. As you can see in this structure, first, refinement of nafs, tedbirul fard, then how, if person refines himself, then after that, refinement of family, your close circle, then after that, whole society, then tedbirul mudun, management of cities. All right, what time? I have around 5 minutes. All right, I should wrap up very quickly. Actually, this is a conceptual framework, for example, three faculties in Alauddin el-Iji's ethics. As you can see, faculties of human soul, we have faculty of desires, middle way is temperance, faculty of anger, middle way courage, faculty of intellect, middle way wisdom. When any person achieves or takes these three virtues, then he achieves justice. These four terms are actually conceptual framework classical ethics. And it's, of course, goes back to Aristotle ethics. But as I said, Muslim ethicists explain these concepts through Islamic terms. All right, this is, of course, for each middle way, for example, temperance is the middle way, courage is the middle way, wisdom. For each middle way, there are sub-virtues as well. Sub-virtues help to actually maintain or obtain the higher concepts here: temperance, courage, and wisdom. For example, for wisdom, I will show you English as well. For wisdom, seven. In EG, there are seven sub-virtues. For example, clarity of mind, good conceptualization, husn-u tasavvur, hifz, you know, remembrance, zeka, you know, good memory, etc. These are helpful to attain hikmah. Şecaat, as you can see, there are sub-virtues. Temperance, there are sub-virtues. And when we achieve final justice, we have sub-virtues. This is Arabic. I have translated into English. As you can see, wisdom, sub-virtues, clarity of discernment, excellence of understanding, quickness of apprehension, good conceptualization, you know, husn-u tasavvur, ability to learning easy, retentiveness, recollection. These are sub-virtues of wisdom. All right. In academia, we always say, ask students, please conceptualize it. You know, good conceptualization, husn-u tasavvur. Courage, as you can see, there are sub-virtues. And also temperance, there are sub-virtues. And justice also, final concept, there are also sub-virtues. Yeah. But ethics tree by EG, as I said. Let me check. All right, let me wrap up finally. And for each faculty, there is ifrat and there is tefrit. Yeah, there is excess and there is deficiency. For example, wisdom, for wisdom, there is ifrat, excess, cerbezi, for example, deception. And there is also deficiency for a stupidity, foolishness. Person doesn't understand anything. Ifrat and tefrit. For courage, there is ifrat and tefrit. Uncontrolled anger, for example, ifrat, cowardice, tefrit. For temperance, there is ifrat, there is tefrit as well, excess and deficiency as well. For example, wisdom, hikmah, how Teşkopruzade defines wisdom, taharruful mevcudat kema hi ve fi'lu ma yanba'i an yufal. Knowing things as they are. As I said, very Aristotelian, knowing things as they are and acting what is required. This is the definition of wisdom, hikmah. And as you can see, God send you scripture and wisdom and supports this concept of hikmah with the Quran as well. Khalif Ali, and Teşkopruzade frequently cites from Khalif Ali, take wisdom even if it's from hypocrites. Yeah. All right, and there are sicknesses originating from these faculties as well, according to classical framework, bewilderment, hayra, for example, and ignorance, for example. I remember, for example, for compound ignorance, Teşkopruzade said, what's the cure? Stick to rational principles or mathematics or geometry. You know, he says, what is the cure for compound ignorance? Psychological malady is originating from power of anger, for example, extreme wrath or ghadab or cowardice or khawf, you know, and what are the reasons, what are the remedies? They discuss, and of course they include Quran, Sunnah. Of course, sometimes they include according to their own scientific knowledge as well. Are more maybe Greek or medieval scientific knowledge. Some of them may not be correct in today's context, of course, according to in today's scientific knowledge. Basically, as I said, what is the structure in any classical Islamic ethics? Character, definition of character, if can character change or not, moderation and virtues, subcategories of the three virtues, applied ethics, how virtues are acquired and maintained, and the three sections, as I said, after 2C, management of individual, first management of individual, tedbirul fard, then household management, tedbirul manzil, and finally, political philosophy, al-hikmah al-madani or tedbirul muzun. Discussion of good governance. What are the characteristics of good leadership, leaders, etc. Teşkopruzade's Sharh al-Akhlaq al-Adudiyya. This is the text that I and my colleague have read, as I said, for over 2 years. And it is recently edited and published by Turkish Manuscript Association in 2014. Yeah, Tashkoprazadeh, of course, he is an Ottoman scholar from 16th century, very famous scholarly family from Bursa. And maybe if, according to some, Tashkoprazadeh actually is a turning point for this post-classical period, because he followed post-classical period's Islamic scholarship structure. And of course, he contributed to philosophy, Sufism, and some other areas, incorporated scriptural evidence, Islamic thought, worldview, along with Sufism. But references to Aristotle are absent. He does not give reference to Aristotle, but he says, philosophers say in general, philosophers, hukama, he says, hukama, hukama's opinion, philosopher's opinion, and reverence for Ali bin Abi Talib as a figure of piety. Family structure, gender relations, as I said, in some areas actually show medieval period structure and Ottoman life for Tashkoprazadeh's super commentary. One such work that is both lengthy and rich in its portrayal of how 16th century Muslims in predominantly Ottoman lands conceived of virtue, kutuv-e ethic, society structure, and politics. Just my conclusion, what has fascinated us is the way Muslim ethicists engage constructively with Greek ethics, philosophy, and science in their times and attempted to harmonize with them with their worldview, with Islamic worldview. And Al-Iji's intellectual effort is part of a greater practice of medieval Muslim ethicists such as Miskawi, Nasiruddin al-Tusi, who further developed an Islamic philosophy of ethics by reading Aristotle and Aristotle-inspired works. Theoretical and practical ethics, household management, and political philosophy, whose influence in Muslim societies is demonstrated through the numerous extensive commentaries written on Al-Iji's ethics. What are the implications for us today? What are the implications for Muslims' constructive engagement with cumulative human knowledge, existing cumulative human knowledge, and developing Islamic ethical frameworks according to the intellectual needs of our times, further develop it further? As I said, in the modern period, there are some new attempts. And of course, we cannot limit to just only one approach, very diverse Muslims based on their affiliations, backgrounds. But we see Ahl-e Hadith Manhaj, people of Hadith, Salafi, of course, after revitalization of Salafism, this post-classical period, as I said, more Aristotelian-based ethics looks to be disregarded to some extent. But there are new attempts. For example, I recommend Abdullah Diraz and his book, Morality in the Quran. He did his PhD in France, Morality in the Quran. Actually, he attempted to do an Islamic ethics with reference to Kantian, you know, Kant's duty-based ethics, Abdullah Diraz. What I believe that Islamic ethics, classical Islamic philosophy of ethics, can contribute to the common good and societal challenges. And also, this could be a good area for interfaith relations, interfaith collaborations across different religious traditions. As I said, in the medieval period, religious traditions tend to adopt this framework. Thank you so much for listening to me. I hope you enjoyed it.